to go about an interview?
Yes.
Is this a good time?
Well, no problem at all.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yep.
First let me tell you...
I was just... What? My last nibble of dinner.
Oh, okay. Well, the timing is great then.
Yes, fine.
Okay. This will appear, I want to tell you to start off, will appear in a magazine called Sports Collector's Digest.
Uh-huh.
And roughly... Oh, 4 to 6 months from now. And one of the side effects of these interviews I do is that the subject receives a very great increase in the number of autograph requests he gets for a period of 2 or 3 weeks after it appears.
Uh-huh.
Now, most of the fellows enjoy that, but every once in a while one of them doesn't care for it, so I always want to say that first off in case...
You know, I do pretty well considering I've been out of it for so long. I probably get about 8 or 10 a week. Requests, you know, for autographs, and those that have baseball cards, or they'll enclose a picture that they might have, you know, a copy of some sort.
Uh-huh.
So I'm kind of flattered in a way that, you know, after the honeymoon is over, that you still, of course, there's an encyclopedia out, and these kids know, you know, that you're still alive. So to you.
The addresses are always there.
Sure.
Well, it's nice to be remembered anyhow, isn't it?
That's right.
And it's, I think anybody who doesn't feel that way has got something wrong with them.
You're right about that.
excuse me, I'm trying to shake a cold, and it's just hanging
boy,
on. And, it's been a miserable winter down here. Where is Milton, Massachusetts?
It's right out south of Boston.
Oh, no kidding. My wife is from Hanson. How close is it to that?
Hanson, well, it isn't too far. Probably 30 miles, something like that.
Okay. I didn't think to ask her if she knew where it was. she's a... keep telling me she wants to move back up there, and I keep telling her I like it here in Kentucky.
Well, it didn't sound to me like you'd like it there with that cold.
It's been a very mild winter here, but it's been just enough to make it hang on. That's neither here nor there. Let's get on and you can get back to your evening. Now, I heard a story years ago that you initiated... a campaign in the newspapers so the Braves would take notice of you, is that correct?
Now, let me have that again, just to clarify it.
Okay, this is a story I heard a long time ago when I was a kid, that you somehow set up a write-in campaign or something in some newspapers around Boston so that the Braves would be aware of you.
Oh, dear. No, what had happened, the Boston newspaper, the Record American, ran a contest for people to write in recommending certain Sandlot or high school players that they had seen and tell why possibly they might have the qualifications to, you know, eventually become a big league ball player.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, I didn't come from a big family, but I had a lot of relatives around. Of course, I just made sure that they all sent in a coupon recommending me. And I don't know how much impact that had on it, but nevertheless, I won the contest, which was a free trip to spring training with the Boston Braves. That was in 1934.
Uh-huh.
And so I responded by, I was president of my class in high school, and they let me off to go to spring training, and down there, of course, they had an open-air school, Miss Aiken's open-air school, I'll never forget. And so mornings I'd go with Bill McKechnie's daughter and Babe Ruth's daughter, and we'd go off to school early in the morning, and then at 10 o'clock I'd be free, and that's when practice would start.
Well, you must have impressed them.
Well, it turned out that way because I graduated from high, went back and finished my high school, and I graduated on a Friday night. I got on a bus Saturday morning and went to Harrisburg and opened up there Saturday night.
And ended up in Boston at the end of the year.
I came back at the end of the year. You know, our season ended, and they just had me, come back to finish out the season.
Well, that must have been pretty exciting for an 18-year-old.
Well, it sure was. It was exciting, and of course, baseball is the one thing I always wanted to do, but you never know whether you have the ability or not, but fortunately, my ability did develop, and it worked out just fine.
Yeah, it sure did in the long run.
Yeah.
Well, your first full year with Boston was 37.
That's correct.
And you Well, you're the regular first baseman there, but in 39, they got Buddy Hassett, and
right.
they gave you Pittsburgh. They didn't trade you. That was
they didn't give me to Pittsburgh. I was sold. In fact, Benswanger called me up in the office the next morning after I sold him and showed me a check for $20,000 that he had to pay for me.
Oh.
Which I knew, my God, I looked at a check of $20,000 and I couldn't believe it.
That was a heck of a price.
In those days, that was an awful lot of money. Plus, there was another ball player involved, a minor league player that, you know, was involved in that.
Okay.
It was just a throw-in, you know.
Well, I knew it said, I saw somewhere it was cash, and I figured unless it was a lot of cash. Yeah, that was a...
That was in 1939, I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's a heck of a good chunk of money today, but nothing compared to what the ball players are getting today.
Oh, well, that's all, you know, whole new ball game, so to speak.
In 38 with the Braves, you and Tony Cuccinello and Max West
right.
hit three straight home runs.
Now,
none of the three of you were known for your power, so that must have been a pretty unlikely trio.
Well, potentially, you know, like Max West had pretty good power. Tony was, you know, sort of like me. He hit 16, 17 home runs, something like that. Maybe Tony didn't hit that many. But New York, the Polo Grounds is a different kind of a ball.
Oh, yeah.
If you hit the lines down there, you're going to be getting home runs.
Right.
But it was just odd that the three of us, one right after the other, hit home runs.
You remember the pitcher? Was there more?
No, I don't recall that.
Well, when you went, let's go back over to Pittsburgh now, I do think it was a National League record. I believe it was broken later. 1941, you made 21 putouts in a game, in a nine-inning game.
Yeah.
I think Ernie Banks, I think it was, and I made a note of that somewhere, but I think he broke it about 20 years later.
Is that right?
I think he had 22.
I think Rip Sewell pitched that ball game.
Must have been a few ground balls.
Yes, it sure was.
I've seen a couple of games in which a first baseman only made one or two putouts, you know, nowadays. And I can't imagine, you getting throws, what's that, over two an inning?
That's right.
Was there anything else special about the game other than the fact that Sewell kept the ball down?
Well, the thing of it is that when you're setting records like that, you're not really aware of it. You don't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after it's happened, then you can go back and say, geez, I mean, they were popping that ball on the ground all the way around.
Do you remember how many fly ball outs there were, by any chance?
I don't think there were over three.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's something.
See, I'm going back. Now, you're taking me back 50 years more.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was 2 months old when you did that, so.
Well, you should remember that.
I guess I should. I wouldn't pay attention. well, there is no question that you were the top defensive first baseman of your day, anyhow.
Yep.
Now, that's a question that you may have to call on your ego, or you may not want to say. Were you the best fielding first baseman ever?
Well, put it this way, I felt, down deep, I felt that there's nobody that could hit a ball by me or throw one by me. Of course, they did, but this is the attitude I had. I used to tell my infielders, and I'd say, hey, throw the ball bad to make me look good, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I just had that feeling that, you know, naturally, I made some errors or I did this, that, but the feeling inside of me was that, that I was a top first baseman. There were a lot of ones that, excuse me, I don't know whether I get your cold or not.
I hope not.
Here's the situation also. Now, there were a lot of first basemen that might have had a better average, but they never could move. You know, like Mize, Johnny, for instance, that might have a higher average one. But, cripes, I mean, if you hit a ball 2 feet either side of him, he didn't move anyway.
Right, yeah.
So you can't make errors unless you make, good tries.
Well, fielding average alone is just probably the worst measure of
ability on a thing. That's true.
Just going by stories I've heard, things I've read, and looking at your record, at least in your time, there was no one better, and it's awful hard to find anyone, anytime. Maybe Hodges at his peak might have been something like that. But
a different type of first baseman than I was. You know.
Very much so. He was, of course, he didn't need gloves with those hands he had either. Well, now, just looking at the records, it appears that if gold gloves were given when you were playing, you probably would have won five of them anyhow.
I think I would have been entitled, yes.
You think any more than that?
I wouldn't. You know, there were some pretty good first basemen around my day.
Oh, yeah.
Camilli was a good first baseman.
Sure he was.
Yeah. I always enjoyed playing against him and watching him. Frank McCormick was a good first baseman.
Buddy Hassett could do the job there, too.
Well, Buddy was, I have no comment on Buddy.
Okay.
when Stengel made that decision to take Hassett over me,
well, that was...
I looked up the records that I compiled against what Hassett had. I think there was a little bit of a buddy relationship there. But, of course, it was all to my advantage. The greatest thing that ever happened to me was being traded from Boston to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly did have your finer years with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's right.
Back to Hassett. I agree with you. He didn't strike out. I guess it probably took an act of Congress to get him to strike out. But
yeah.
He certainly didn't produce the runs you produced.
That's right.
He didn't get on base as you did, anything like that.
Right.
Yeah, you two guys were totally different.
That's right.
Well, your 1940 year, I guess, was your big year offensively, 104 RBIs, and that was...
I only had, 130-some-odd base hits?
139 hits. Excellent production from the number of hits. You walked a lot. Now, RBIs were fourth in the league. Your on-base average, well, you led the league in walks, I believe, three times or four times?
Three or four times, yeah.
And your on-base average was, of course, they didn't figure it then, but going back, I think you read it back two or three times.
Yeah.
You had to be a pretty valuable man. Where did you bat in the lineup?
Well, we varied around. I'd go like 3, 4, and 5, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it would depend, you know, who was there. Now, like when Kiner was there, of course, he was the big gun on things, too, you know.
Sure.
And, of course, I didn't play that much. But usually you talk about, you know, like the Wainers would be, you know, going 1-2 or something. And Aki Vaughn would be right in there, you know, as a good third man. And I'd be fourth or fifth most of my career.
That's a good lineup.
Yeah.
Shame you guys didn't have just a little bit better pitching.
Yeah.
43 All-Star game. I bet that was pretty exciting.
It was that.
You were voted in as a starter?
That's right.
Yeah. You went 0-2. What happened?
No, I don't think I got up. Did I get up twice?
I looked it up in the book. I did not write it down. I've got the book right here in front of me, though.
I haven't got thought about it. I didn't recall whether it was once or twice.
Let me look and see.
Of course, they stopped me out, and of course, you know who I had to face. It was Dutch Leonard. Of course, all he was firing up there was knuckleballs.
Yeah,
you know?
That's awful.
I'm trying to follow that damn thing around.
Okay, yeah, you were 0-2.
Yeah,
made three putouts.
Then Dahlgren came in. He was a local Philadelphia first baseman at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess your second time up, you were against Neuhauser. Is that right? Do you remember that?
I want to tell you, you must have all the records there.
Well, he followed Leonard, and I don't have it per se, but you were 0-2, and Leonard started, and Neuhauser followed him.
Yeah. I would think in a situation like that, that he might have, with Neuhauser going in there, he might have put Dahlgren in. I'm not certain, you know, because it was such a long while ago.
Well, you might have faced Leonard twice then, which is doubly bad.
Yeah, double knuckles.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a horrible pitch to try to swing at.
I want to tell you should be up there trying to do it. This Charlie Howell they got now, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they said that ball, it's just amazing. Now, they've been able to show you on TV, they can slow it down to actually watch just exactly what that does, the revolutions of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you something, it's an amazing thing to see.
It was, I was a pitcher when I was a kid. My wanted to play ball. I was not quite good enough. But anyhow, I threw the knuckleball.
Did
I threw a very good knuckleball. And
My coach always kept telling me if I could do anything else but throw a knuckleball, I could probably be a pretty good pitcher. I never understood how it worked, but it sure did work.
Well, I'll tell you, you just can't take a real vicious swing. You got to kind of dance around with the ball and try to make contact.
Mm-hmm. No, you cannot follow it with the eye. Well, after 43, you went in the Navy for 2 years.
Right.
You played at Bainbridge, Maryland, with an awful lot of awful good ball players.
That's right.
And you were the leading hitter there, if I heard correctly. I know you had Buddy Blattner and Eddie Mixis there. Who else was there? I know Bartell, was he there?
Yep, Dick was there at third base. And, it's Bob Sheffing was catching.
Mm-hmm.
Good ball player.
Yes, he was.
And we had a couple of top minor league players that were on that team. And we had, we had a couple of good pitchers, Coombs from New York.
Mm-hmm.
Maxie Wilson, who was, you probably wouldn't remember, very crafty left-handed pitcher. And we had a good ball club.
I remember the name, but I don't remember him specifically.
I seem to forget a lot of them, too.
It's all, anything.
Dick Sisler was there.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, Dick was there.
Yeah.
And as Buddy Blattner and Bob Sheffing, we all palled around together anyway.
That was an awfully good service team.
Yeah.
Well, you came out, and you went back to Pittsburgh.
Right.
They traded you to Cleveland.
Yes, the year that they were world champions.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, they had Eddie Robinson over there. Of course, the trade was just fine with me because they had some confidence that I was going to be the first baseman. And everything was going great in spring training. And I hit a ball to right center. And I was rounding second base. And, of course, instead of, looking at the third base coach, I was watching the ball. And the way I hit the bag, and I broke my metatarsal arch.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, of course, in those days, the trainers didn't know. They never took care of their ball players. You know what they did? They tried to build up my arch with crossing Band-Aids.
Oh, my.
You know? So that when you put your shoe on, this was supposed to force the arch up so it would hold it there. Of course, I couldn't even move, you know?
Yeah.
And they did nothing. And they never did in those days. And so as a result, when it came cut down time, why, I was the guy that was going to go. So I was going into New York. I was going to go to Ebbets Field and try to see if I couldn't get a job. And I was hurting then. I was walking down the street, and I saw this little store that said the art supports metal this will cure you overnight, stuff like that. And, geez, I went in there, and I bought one of those things. And I put it on, went out, and I worked out in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And, I thought I looked pretty good, but they didn't have a place for me. So before I left, I got a call from Carl Hubble to go out to Minneapolis. So with a bonus and a salary, it didn't look bad at all. And that's mm-hmm. what I took advantage of.
So you spent the year at American Association?
That's right.
And in Boston, re-bought you?
Then the following year, I started out in Jersey City
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to get closer to home. My family was here. And so the whole family came down to Jersey City and just got the food put in, the kids to bed, and the phone rang. And it was Boston telling me to report the next day to Chicago.
Oh, boy.
There, the poor folks, my God. She had to repack everything, put the kids back in the car, drive all the way back to Boston. I got a plane, and I'm in ready the next day to play in Chicago. So that was quite an experience.
I bet. It's a lot tougher on her than it was on you, isn't it?
Oh.
Well, so that was it. Did you just decide to hang them up after that year?
No. I had a pretty good year with Boston. I was
yeah.
very disappointed they didn't give me a shot. But that's the way baseball is anyway.
Yes, it is.
And so then I got contacted by Los Angeles in the Pacific Coast League.
Right.
And with their bonus and salary, you know, it was more money than I made playing in Boston.
Wow.
So I said, well, I'll take a shot at it. So I was out there, and I was hitting about 360 or 380, and the boys, one of the boys had contracted the mumps. And I thought that I had had the mumps back when I was a kid. Now I'm about 34 years old. All of a sudden, I'm telling you, I came up with the mumps. We're coming home in Seattle, and I was shaking all over, frozen. This was so. So I saw the doctor the next day. Said, hey, you got the mumps. So I'm telling you, I was so weak. I couldn't. Well, I couldn't play the rest of the year. I played a little bit, but I was so tired I couldn't swing a bat.
Yeah.
So I went. And of course, the minute that all happened, at the end of the season, they were no longer interested, and I had lost. I had kind of lost my desire. My legs were beginning to hurt, and when your legs hurt, you know, you're hurting all over.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't have that real desire, so I said to my wife, let's pack up the kids, get back to Boston, and I'll go get a job, and we'll start all over again. And that's exactly what I did.
Good. What did you go into?
Well, very many different things. However, I sold industrial lubricants that I had no idea what that was. I sold furniture at Payne's Furniture Company here, which was a big furniture store. And then all of a sudden I got a break, and I got a job as recreation director for the city of Melrose. I was looking for a job that had a retirement fund to go along with my baseball pension, which I was fortunate enough to get involved in.
Yeah, that's great.
And so I was 25 years as recreation director, and I retired from the city of Melrose about 10 years ago. So that's just about the whole story.
Yeah, that sounds like an excellent way to end it up.
Yeah, and so with the baseball pension and the city pension and two Social Securities, I'm living pretty good.
Great.
I said, you know, the funny thing, the pension that I'm getting is more than twice what in the hell I made playing.
Yeah, that's amazing. I talked, I think he was, well, yeah, no, you played, well, he was in the other league. Carl Schott, remember him in the American League? Yeah.
Sure.
Talked to him a while back. He said he'd play for nothing just to qualify for the pension again.
Well, that's absolutely true. They're increasing it, whatnot, and of course, I mean, the players today, they're going to get it all, but who cares? I'm getting enough that makes me very happy.
Yeah. Well,
I'm lucky to have gotten anything.
It's a great deal, and it's a shame
well,
those fellows missed it.
Be a poor ball player again.
No, I sure won't. What a life.
I know it. Enjoyed the whole thing, I'll tell you.
That's good.
I never made any money, you know, as far as what they're talking today, but to me, it was fun.
Well, now, a couple of fellows have told me that compared to the money today, of course, they didn't. But they said they were bringing home, in the 40s, they were bringing home maybe $10,000.
Correct.
But the guys back home, kids they went to school with and everything, they were making $1,500 and $2,000.
That is exactly, you hit the nail right on the head.
It's all relative.
I know my first year in the big leagues, I got $3,700. And I couldn't believe you could make that much money having fun. That's right. And in all the years, because money was never an object. Well, we knew Babe Ruth made dough. Thank goodness we were the 10 percenters, you know.
Yeah.
But it was fun all the time. It's big business today, and I don't know. I think the players are different also.
It doesn't seem to be as much fun today.
That's right.
Going back to your career, is there one game that stands out as maybe the biggest thrill or your best game or something like that?
Well, you know, like I tell everybody, people ask me a question like that, and to me, any time that I got a base hit to win a ball game or made an outstanding play that was instrumental in winning a ball game, that to me was a distinct thrill.
Yeah.
But I can recall playing Chicago. I think we beat them, I don't know, maybe it was 3-1 or 3-2. And I, the first two times I'd hit home runs off a jinx of mine, which was Claude Passeau. I used to have a hell of a time trying to hit him. All of a sudden it turned around, and I used to call him cousin. Jesus, I'm telling you, he'd blast me. So the third one I hit off the top of the wall in right center for a double. So I drove in all the runs, and we one either 3-1 or 3-2. That was the best productive one as far as getting home runs and winning a ball game.
Yeah, well, that's a good game for anybody anytime. Especially, that was my next question. Well, the best pitcher you saw, and who was the toughest on you?
Well, no, I'll tell you, Paso was a right-hander, was one of the toughest, yet all of a sudden, after a couple of years, you know, and he could never, he used to call, you know, I'd call him cousin. And he used to say, Jesus, he said, if I faced nine guys like you every day, for Christ's sake, I'd win 30 ball games, you know? So we had this going back and forth all the time.
He was a good pitcher.
Yes, he was. I'm telling you, he had a great attitude out there, too. The thing of it is, when you're going well, pitchers don't, you know, you don't really single out one that gives you a lot of trouble. But when you're in a slump, I mean, the ball now looks like an aspirin. When you're going good, it looks like a softball. You know?
A couple of fellas have told me that. So when you're going good, they're all easy.
Oh, sure.
When you're going bad, nobody's easy.
I know it. And boy, I'm telling you, when you're in a slump, I don't care what you do, you can't get out of it.
Yeah. Again, it's all relative. Depends on how everything
That's
else
right.
is. Well, who was the best player you saw? The best hitter or best player in your time?
Well, you know, now I'm going to go back to, I thought, for fellow that I played with or against.
Didn't matter.
I thought the best-looking hitter I played with was Paul Wehner.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he was just a magician.
Yeah.
I mean, he could put that ball. I remember one day he got about, I think he got six hits. And he you know, we used to say, oh, geez, you know, he got a special bat. He had us pick out the bat. Before he go to play, what do you want me to use? We'd pick out this, and it didn't make any difference to him. And of course, an all-around player against was Musial. I thought he was great. He could do a little of everything.
Yeah.
He had the speed. He was a great hitter. He was a great competitor. I mean, there were an awful lot of great ball players in that era.
Yes, there sure were.
You can't, you know, like somebody says, who would you point out? Well, there were so many great ones, in my estimation, that there could have been 30 players that I thought was really outstanding. Ina Slaughter was great. You know, Terry Moore was great. What, the kid over in Brooklyn?
Reaser?
Yeah, he was all. See, now you bring up names. Duke Snyder was great.
Mm-hmm.
Fellas like that, and then all of a sudden you start to write out a list, and all of a sudden you find, geez, I've got 50 players that look great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of fellas have told me, said that, you know, maybe a name or two comes to mind, but if they start going down them team by team, they're going to come up with a couple of guys each team.
You know, you're talking about, then you said, who am I talking about? Risa? A hell of a ball player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all those things along there.
Yeah.
I probably could name more good players than I could bad players.
I think, you know, well, pound for pound, I think you had more good players in your time than they do now.
Yeah.
It's just too diluted today.
Well, you know, of course, everything's different today, too. The gloves are different. The ball is different. The bats are different. The playing fields are different. The conditioning of athletes is different today. They used to tell us, now, look, now, when you go home this winter, don't do anything to maybe get muscle bound. Now, that's the way they do. Everything's pumping iron.
Of course, they're striking out 120, 140 times a season.
I know that. You know, I just can't. When I see these guys, you know, swinging from their ass after two strikes with men in scoring position where all you need is a fly ball, a ground ball or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, see, the home runs is what pays off.
I guess so.
Don't, averages now, you know, when I see guys now hitting 210, 220, they couldn't even get into the ballpark. But today with expansion and whatnot, guy has a little power, you know. And you know, and also pitchers that don't even have 500 records. Making this kind of dough.
It's amazing.
Really, you know, I think back, I wonder what the pitchers in my day that were like 18 and 10 or 18 and 12 that were probably getting 7,500, something like that. What the, you know, what they must be thinking today.
Talked to Mel Harder. He said they gave him a contract for $12,000 one year. And he complained. He didn't. He said he wanted more money. And they said, "Look, we can show you that Lefty Gomez is only making $16,000."
You know, another thing in those days, You know, I can remember having a good year over in Pittsburgh when I had that big year, and I don't know, I think I was making seven. So Ben's wearing it at the end of the season. I'll tell you what I'll do. If you sign right now, I'll give you $10,000. If you don't, when you get your contract, it'll only be for nine. So what the hell could you do?
Yeah.
They used to tell you what you're going to make, and if you don't like it, stay home.
Yeah. Well, now you're going to sign for 5 years and don't have to produce until the fifth year.
That's right. The owners dominated the players, and now it's just the opposite.
There's got to be a happy medium reached.
I'm wondering when it can be reached.
It's awful hard to see this.
I don't know how much for. I mean, take these guys getting $7 million or $6 million or $5 million a year. Unbelievable.
You know, somebody's going to give it to them.
Well,
take it. Shoot, somebody offers me that, I'm going to take it. But I can't see. I just don't understand how it could be offered.
I don't know how they let it. Well, of course, if it hadn't been for television and whatnot, I mean, this could never happen. But, you know, the TV has lost a few bucks on some of the World Series coverage, and their packages might not be so great in the future.
Right.
And there may come that day of reckoning.
Yeah, they got to pay $7 million out when they don't have $7 million coming in. That's going to be awful hard to do.
That's right. And these guys now that sign these long, I think that's why management's trying to get away from these long-term contracts, like giving you five-year contracts or something like that, because how do we know 5 years down the road whether that income's going to be there?
They're trying to get away, but they still give them.
Yeah.
It's very scary.
Right.
Well, would you go back? Do you have any regrets from your career?
No. No, I couldn't possibly have any regrets because I enjoyed the game so much. I look forward every day going out there. So the fact that you didn't do better,